Hi, I'm JJ Virgin. Welcome to the call today, and I have with me today, this might be one of the scariest calls you've ever heard. I heard Jeffrey M. Smith speak at ACAM last year. It was a detoxification seminar, and he talked on genetically modified organisms. And I was telling him before we started talking today that, you know, we listened to his talk, and then we had to go out and eat lunch. We didn't know what to do, but it was absolutely the most riveting lecture that we had at the conference, and possibly one of the most riveting lectures I've ever heard. And, you know, we've all heard that GMOs are bad, but do we really even understand what they are, why they're bad, what's really going on? In his first book, Seeds of Deception, Exposing Industry and Government Lies About the Safety of the Genetically Engineered Foods You're Eating, this, by the way, became the world's best-selling, number one rated book on GMOs. He really talks about all this stuff, but it was amazing when I heard him lecture and he started to show us what we're just not being told about. You know, it's like the research that's being ignored and the information that is so critical, it will completely make you do a 180 on any of this stuff. So I'm really excited to share Jeffrey Smith with you. And I want to make sure before we even start to introduce him that you do have access to his website, because he has put a ton of really great resources together. So this is one that you will want to absolutely favorite, and it's www.responsibletechnology.org. Fabulous, fabulous information. So with that, I would love to introduce Jeffrey Smith, and I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with me today.
Sure, absolutely. The people listening to you are very concerned about what they can eat, and I've got information that can help determine the good answer to that question.
Perfect. So the first thing is, you know, because, again, this is, it all starts here, what exactly is GMO?
Genetically modified organisms. These are organisms where genes are taken from one species and forced into the DNA of other species. Now, you can do this with animals, humans, plants. In fact, they've taken genes from spiders, put them into goats in the hope that they could milk the goat to get spiderweb protein to make bulletproof vests. They put jellyfish genes into pigs so that their noses glow in the dark. With the food that we eat, they take genes from bacteria or viruses and force them into the DNA of soy, corn, cotton, canola, sugar beets, papaya, zucchini, and crookneck squash. Those are the eight GM food crops, and we'll go over them again.
Oh, let's go through them. Yeah, I was going to say those again.
Yes, definitely.
Slowly.
Soybeans, corn, cotton, canola, and sugar beets are the big five. Now, the derivatives of those species are in, I would say, 90% of processed food. So if it comes in a box or a can or a package, and you look at all the ingredients in the back, it probably contains sugar or high fructose corn syrup or soy lecithin or soy protein isolate or one of 70 or so different derivatives from soy, corn, and also the oils from canola and cottonseed. Now, all of those five are engineered to drink poison, to not die when they are sprayed with a poisonous herbicide. They can drink it and they can transform it and not die, and all the other weeds die. There's also corn and cotton plants that have been also genetically engineered to produce poison. They actually produce a pesticide that kills insects by splitting open their stomach and killing them. And then there's the minor crops, three of them, Hawaiian papaya and a little bit of zucchini and crookneck squash, and these are engineered with a gene from viruses, and they have their own risks for human health. So those are the eight crops. There's no more tomatoes in the market, no more potatoes. The seedless watermelons are not genetically engineered. They're just from natural selection. This is a completely different process than sexual reproduction, and it has unique risks, and it might be quite dangerous.
I'm just so upset that Hawaiian papaya... How could they do that?
Well, I was very upset, too. In fact, most of Hawaiian papaya is genetically engineered, and it also contaminates the non-GM papaya trees, and so you don't really know, even if it's not supposed to be genetically modified, it might still be.
Okay. So, you know, you hear about all this. Where does the FDA fit into all of this?
Well, when you read the documents, the formerly secret documents made public from a lawsuit in 1999, you discover that the overwhelming consensus among the scientists at the FDA were that genetically modified foods are dangerous. They said new allergies, toxins, new diseases, nutritional problems, all of these could easily occur as part of the unpredicted side effects resulting from this dangerous technology, and that in order to be safe, the FDA ought to require long-term, comprehensive safety testing. And yet the White House had told the FDA, this was in the early 90s, to promote the biotech industry because they believed it would help U.S. exports. And so the FDA recruited the former attorney of biotech giant Monsanto to be in charge of the policy at the FDA. This is Michael Taylor. He was in charge of the policy, which ultimately ignored the scientists, claimed that the agency knew nothing about the risks, and therefore said GMOs should be safe. If the company that makes them say they're safe, we have no further questions. You don't even have to tell us before putting it on the market. Michael Taylor later became Monsanto's vice president and now is the de facto food safety czar back at the FDA, appointed this summer. So we're in a situation where the risks were clearly defined by the FDA scientists nearly two decades ago, but they were ignored, and now we're seeing evidence that they were justified in their concerns.
So you say they're justified, so tell me, like, what might go wrong here with people consuming GMOs? What are the risks here?
Well, the categories are pretty wide. There's reproductive problems, as the scientists said themselves, allergies, toxins. There's we should take them one at a time because it's a little bit overwhelming to just list them. Let's start with reproductive problems, because we've seen in the United States, since GMOs were introduced in 1996, higher levels of infant mortality, reduced more low birth weight babies, higher levels of infertility. Now, no one is looking to see if GMOs are causing these problems. There's no post-marketing surveillance, but evidence both in the laboratory and in the field suggests that GMOs may be a contributor. In the laboratory, when they fed genetically modified soy to female rats, and then 2 weeks later they got them pregnant, more than half of their babies died within 3 weeks, compared to only a 10% death rate for mother rats that were fed natural soy. The babies were also smaller and, in preliminary evidence, could not reproduce. Now, when they fed male rats the soy, there was a change in the color of their testicles from pink to blue. When they fed male mice genetically modified soy, their testicles also changed and showed damage in the young sperm cells. And when the mice embryos of GM-fed parents, again soy, were analyzed, the young embryo's DNA functioned differently. And then in addition, we have the Austrian government publishing a study in November showing that GM corn produced symptoms of infertility and smaller babies in mice as well. In the field, we have farmers in the U.S. that claim that their pigs or cows became sterile from certain varieties of corn that's genetically engineered. We have in the Philippines, well, actually, let's start with India. We have buffalo that when they ate GM cottonseed, most of them had reproductive problems. They had reproductive issues like abortions, premature deliveries, miscarriages, prolapsed uterus, etc. So we see in buffalo, cows, pigs, among livestock, and mice and rats in the laboratory, real serious dangers with respect to infertility and offspring health and, in fact, survival.
Geez, and of course we know that we've got an infertility problem that's been increasing in the U.S., so
absolutely,
probably worldwide. I just know about what's going on here. So
the allergies are also increasing in the U.S., and there's a lot of evidence that GM crops are a supporter for that. Soon after GM soy was introduced to the U.K., soy allergies skyrocketed by 50%. No follow-up study was done to see if GMOs were the cause, but we have put together a list of all these different ways that soy, when genetically engineered, might increase allergic responses. In fact, one study showed with a skin prick allergy test that some people do react to GM soy that don't react to normal soy. The GM soy has higher levels of a known allergen called trypsin inhibitor. It has a completely unexpected allergen in there that came from the result of the huge damage that occurs in the plant during the process of genetic engineering. In fact, the soy, which is engineered not to die when sprayed with Roundup herbicide, it's called Roundup Ready Soy, and it's sold as a package with Roundup herbicide, that the gene that's inserted into that plant produces a protein that has properties of a dust mite allergen. So if you're allergic to dust mites, you might be allergic to the soy as well. In addition, the soy has much higher levels of Roundup herbicide on it because they spray tons more herbicide on these so-called herbicide-tolerant crops, and that's a toxin that we consume, and that might cause food insensitivities or allergic reactions. And finally, when they fed the soy to mice, the digestion didn't work as well. The pancreatic digestive fluids were suppressed by as much as 77%. Now, if we have trouble digesting proteins, then a huge variety of food might start to trigger allergic reactions. In fact, that's what's happened in three different studies with animals. They found that a genetically modified crop not only caused allergic reactions or immune system reactions to the crop, but also made them sensitive to other formerly harmless foods.
Wow. So, well, I got to tell you, we do a lot of IgG food sensitivity testing, and at least 60% of the people show up with something, and usually it's 3 to 4 different areas that they're sensitive to.
Yeah, I know that one allergist told me that one allergist told me that he used to test for soy allergies all the time, and now that it's genetically engineered, it's so dangerous, he just tells his patients, just don't eat soy unless it's organic.
Yeah, no, we eat soy and corn are straight out. And I just went to this really cool lecture with Bob Rowntree on nutrigenomics and how, you know, all these different things are upregulating genes. He says the scariest thing with gene upregulation is when you get into GMOs because you don't have any clue what they're going to do.
I know. They finally did an analysis of all the different proteins that were being produced from one BT corn, and lo and behold, there was a gene that was switched on. It was not even expressing itself in the normal corn, but when it was genetically engineered, it was producing a known allergen, and that might be responsible in part for the increase in allergies in the United States. Now, let me explain about these crops, the corn crops, this particular type of corn. I mentioned that corn and cotton are engineered to produce their own pesticide. So here's the backstory. There's a soil bacterium called BT, or Bacillus thuringiensis, and it produces a toxin that kills certain insects. It splits open their stomach and kills them. Now, farmers for a few decades have been spraying this BT bacterium on plants when needed. It's even used by organic farmers as a natural pest treatment. But it washes off, it biodegrades, and it doesn't usually end up in the plants that we eat. However, with genetic engineering, they put the gene from the soil bacterium into the crops, the corn and cotton crops, and every cell of the plant has a little spray bottle which sprays BT at concentrations that are thousands of times greater than the spray form, than the natural form. They're designed to be more toxic than the natural form, and they even have properties of known allergens. Now, that BT, the reason why the companies claim that the BT crops are safe is because they say, well, BT has a history of safe use in agriculture. They're wrong. When BT was used, when it was sprayed by planes over the Pacific Northwest to kill gypsy moths, it also elicited allergic reactions in at least 500 people. Some had to go to the hospital. Now, in India, thousands of farm workers who are picking the BT cotton, the cotton that produces that same BT toxin, they are reporting the exact same allergic reactions. One hospital described how people are getting rashes all over the bodies, and it's basically because of the increase in the use of BT cotton in the area. And then when they allow the animals to graze on the cotton plants after harvest, thousands die, showing not only an allergic reaction to humans, but a toxic reaction in animals. There was thousands of sheep died. In fact, some colleagues of mine there did a small study where they fed certain sheep two different varieties of BT cotton and a third non-GM cotton. 100% of the sheep that ate the BT cotton died within a month, and those that ate the non-BT cotton were fine, had no symptoms whatsoever. Then in the buffalo, we talked about the buffalo eating the cotton seeds. Many of the calves died and the adults died. And I visited a village in Hyderabad, you know, actually in Andhra Pradesh, near Hyderabad, where they were allowing their buffalo to eat cotton plants for years, about 7 or 8 years, and they had never had a problem. But on January 3rd last year, they allowed their buffalo to graze on the BT cotton plants for the first time. The next day, the buffalo were unconscious or couldn't move, and within 3 days, they were all dead. And we are eating the same BT in the form of corn, and the BT corn also provokes an immune response in mice, according to an Italian government study. Like even Monsanto's own study showed that the BT corn had evidence of toxicity in liver and kidneys. People living next to a BT cornfield in the Philippines described symptoms similar to allergic reactions and toxic reactions when they were breathing in the pollen from the nearby field, and when the same seeds were planted in 4 more villages the next year, the same symptoms returned during the time of pollination. And there's claims among farmers both in the Philippines and in Germany that BT corn was responsible for deaths of their livestock. So we are eating the same BT toxin in the form of the corn that is genetically engineered in our food supply.
The thing that strikes me here is how come this is continuing to go on when they're doing studies or seeing this, and I mean, are other countries more proactive than we are?
Well, the thing is, it depends on the government. I mean, there was a classic example, which I describe in the first chapter of Seeds of Deception, about Dr. Arpad Pusztai, who's become a good friend of mine. He is the world's greatest scientist in his field, and was awarded a $3 million grant by the UK government to figure out how to test for GMO food safety. This was back in the 90s. And he worked with 20 to 30 members of a research team over 3 different institutes to come up with the protocol that was supposed to be implemented by the European Union as part of their review process. But he found something that the people who gave him the money, the pro-GM UK government, were counting on. He discovered that GM foods were dangerous. He had fed rats supposedly harmless genetically modified potato, and the rats within 10 days had potentially precancerous cell growth in their digestive tract, smaller brains, livers, and testicles, partial atrophy of the liver, damaged immune system. If you remember from the talk I gave at the American College for the Advancement of Medicine, ACAM, there was a slide of practically a doubling of the stomach lining. That was his study, and he went public with his concerns and was a hero for about 2 days at his prestigious institute. And then 2 phone calls were allegedly placed from the UK Prime Minister's office, forwarded through the receptionist to the director of the institute, and the next day Dr. Pusztai was fired from his job after 35 years, silenced with threats of a lawsuit. His team was disbanded. They never implemented his protocols. Instead, they attacked him, destroyed his reputation, or tried to. And then he was ungagged by an order of parliament, and now his research is published. But what it showed was 2 things. First of all, it showed the merciless attack on anyone who dares to question the safety and appropriateness of genetically engineered foods. And I'm actually writing a cover story for a magazine that lists many, many of these scientists that have had similar treatment. But his study also showed that the reason why the potatoes caused the damage to the rats was the process itself of genetically engineering the potatoes. It had nothing to do with the particular gene that was put in. That produced an insecticide, and the insecticide had been tested, and that was safe. But the process, what happens when you take genes from, let's say, the soil bacterium, you make millions of copies, you put it into a gun, you shoot that gun into a plate of millions of cells, hoping that some of the genes make it into the DNA of some of those cells. Then you clone those cells into full plants. That process of insertion plus cloning causes hundreds or thousands of mutations. It could cause genes that are deleted, permanently turned on, permanently turned off, and hundreds or thousands of genes can change their levels of expression to be upregulated or downregulated. And so we end up in a situation where it's a genetic roulette. There could be all sorts of changes in the plant, and they're never tested properly to determine if they're causing these problems in human beings. His was
so
the most.
Are they testing? I've got to interrupt. Do they? Sure. So they test it outside of the situation. They take the one thing that they're going to genetically modify, take that, say, oh, this is safe this way, but they don't test the end effect.
Well, there's a number of things that they do. In the United States, they don't require anything. And one popular test is a high dose. They take a gene that they put into a crop, but they insert it into E. coli bacteria, turning the bacteria into a little living factory, and they produce the protein that's normally produced in the crop. They give a high dose to a group of mice, one high dose, and they watch the mice for 28 days. And if the mice don't die, they figured it's safe to feed the crops to people for their lifetime.
Chronic use.
Yeah, exactly right. Or they sometimes do a feeding study for animals over just 90 days, but they design their research, they rig it to avoid finding problems. They've got bad science down to a science. And in my book, Genetic Roulette, I have a whole part, 42 pages, on how they meticulously design their studies to miss obvious problems. Or even if they do get problems, which they do and we report them, they'll write them off as not biologically significant or not treatment related without any scientific backing, just simply statements that are echoed by the probiotic review committees around the world that are staffed by the biotech industry's own people.
Are any of the countries up on this and not allowing GMOs, or is everybody kind of in on this whole dirty secret?
There are many, many countries that don't allow the planting of GMOs. Germany is resisting planting, France, Austria, Norway, Switzerland, Greece, the counties of Mendocino in California and Trinity and Santa Cruz and Marin all have bans in place. There's a city in Maine that has a ban. Zambia has banned it, even in the food supply. Venezuela has banned it. Sudan. There's a bunch of places that ban the planting. It's harder to ban it in the food supply when people get imports from the United States because it's in most of our processed foods.
I know. That's what I'm hearing this, and it sounds very much like toxicity. It's like we've got, you know, the wind blowing and the water flowing, and here if this ends up in processed foods and it ends up it's an end product, then it seems ubiquitous. And like, so what do we do now? Which are the products that are made from GMOs so we can look at how we can avoid them?
Well, one more risk we'll discuss before
okay.
we answer that question, because this I was saving this to the end.
There's a few more I can talk about,
but I think you get the point. But this one's unique, and we can also talk about RBGH milk too.
Let's go for them. Let's get them all out on the table here.
All right, okay, all right. We'll take a little time here. we'll do this one slowly then. Okay, we'll give you the full backstory. When you look at the documents made public from a lawsuit that show how the scientists at the FDA were concerned, one of the questions they had been posed was, what about the antibiotic-resistant marker gene that's used during the insertion process of GMOs that ends up staying in the crops, and it produces a protein which allows the crop to survive antibiotics? Well, they were appalled. They said that genes might transfer, these antibiotic-resistant marker genes might transfer into the bacteria living inside our intestines, resulting in unkillable diseases that could survive applications of antibiotics. But they were told by the biotech industry, oh, don't worry, genes are destroyed during digestion, there's no problem about gene transfer. So they finally did a study and published in 2004, the only human feeding study ever published on GMOs. They took 7 human volunteers, they had colostomy bags, they had their lower intestines removed. It wasn't removed for the study, and they fed them soy burgers and the soy milkshake from genetically modified soy, and then looked in the colostomy bag and found, to their surprise, how much intact genetically modified soy had survived passage through the stomach and the small intestines. But what they found that was most shocking to them was that in 3 of the 7 volunteers, before they were ever fed the soy meal, they had the gene that had been inserted into the soy, making it Roundup ready or herbicide tolerant. That gene had transferred and taken up residence into the DNA in the bacteria living inside our intestines and continued to function. So the gut bacteria of these folks were Roundup ready, unkillable with Roundup herbicide, because they had these genes inside them functioning. This means long after we stop eating genetically modified crops, we may still have these dangerous foreign proteins like a possible allergen from soy produced over and over again inside us. If you eat a corn chip from corn that's genetically engineered to produce its own toxic pesticide, if that gene transfers to your gut bacteria, it means it might turn it into living pesticide factories. It also means that the antibiotic-resistant gene might be creating antibiotic-resistant diseases. It also means that the promoter, which switches on the genes that are inserted, that little on switch That also transferred into the human gut bacteria. That could switch on genes at random inside us, in our own bodies or in the bacteria, causing an overproduction of who knows what, a carcinogen, an allergen, toxin. So this is a very serious long-term consequence. And when I describe this at meetings like ACAM and the American Academy for Environmental Medicine and the Pan-American Allergy Society and American Public Health, where I've spoken and many others, the doctors often raise questions from the floor or speak to me afterwards saying they've seen a lot of gastrointestinal disorders in the United States since GMOs were introduced, and perhaps we're colonizing the gut bacteria of North Americans with these genes from these GM crops.
Wow. Well, I mean, I just think of myself. I'm trying to think of a client I see that doesn't have some kind of GI problems. You know, and we do a lot of testing, so we see a lot of food sensitivities, a lot of gut flora disruption, a lot of just digestive issues, you know, inflammation, everything.
Yeah,
it's rare to find someone normal.
I know, and I'm sure your listeners know the importance of gut flora. It's not trivial. There's 10 times more cells in the bacteria living inside us than there are in our entire bodies. It's part of our immune system, digestive system. It blocks transfer into the bloodstream, produces vitamins. And if we create imbalance from the crops, that could be serious. And it's not just the crops. These crops also have higher levels of herbicide, and the herbicides that are used specifically on these crops kill bacteria. So we may also be disrupting the balance of gut bacteria simply by eating these foods.
That is amazing. Frightening. So, and what's
the...
Should we take a look at the milk? Let's keep going.
Next. Okay. What else can I eat? When is it going to shut up? All right, the bovine growth hormone. People have heard of this probably. It's a genetically engineered drug injected into cows to increase milk supply. It was put out by Monsanto, and there's been such consumer concern about this that Monsanto ultimately sold it to Eli Lilly in the fall, figuring that its days were numbered, and I believe it is. But it's still being used by perhaps 10% of the cows in the United States, which means it's in a lot of dairy products, but 55% of the dairies of the top 100 have already committed to remove it in some of all their products because people know that it's linked to cancer. What happens is this. You insert the drug into the cows, and it changes the milk. First of all, there's more mastitis, a painful udder infection, which increases the amount of pus in the milk. Then the farmers give the cows more antibiotics, which put more antibiotics in the milk. There's more bovine growth hormone that ends up in the milk itself. But most importantly, there's more IGF-1, insulin-like growth factor 1, in the milk. Now, IGF-1 is in milk normally, and milk drinkers increase their levels of IGF-1. But in this milk, it's in much higher levels. Now, women with high levels of IGF-1, premenopausal women, are 7 times more likely to develop breast cancer. Men with high levels are 4 times more likely to get prostate cancer. It's also linked to lung and colon cancers and other cancers. It's also linked to high rates of fraternal twins. A study in the Journal of Reproductive Medicine in 2006 said that the higher rates of fraternal twins in the United States compared to the UK are probably due to the bovine growth hormone because the UK has banned bovine growth hormone, as has most of the industrialized countries, including Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and all of Europe and Japan. But we continue to use it here. And hopefully its days are numbered because people are rejecting it, which gives us a nice idea of how to end GMOs too, which we can talk about later.
Wow. Okay. So, with that, should we look at how we can, how we even find places? What, you know, what are the products made from? How do you avoid them?
Good.
Well, difficult.
We've made it easier for people with a non-GMO shopping guide. If you go to our website, responsibletechnology.org, responsibletechnology.org, we have a downloadable shopping guide. It's also distributed often free by doctors and in health food stores and whatnot. And we have usually some brochures on the dangers of two to motivate people to use the guide. And that explains the 4 major tips, plus it lists the actual brands. The tips are, 1, if you can, buy organic. That's not allowed to use GMOs, and of course you get all the benefits of organic. 2, there are products that are not organic but that are listed as non-GMO right on the label. 3, buy products listed right in the shopping guide. Or 4, learn what the at-risk ingredients are, and then when you walk down the aisles, read the ingredients in the back of the label and see if it has any at-risk ingredients. And we list those ingredients on the shopping guide. So that's the corn derivatives like dextrose and maltodextrin and high fructose corn syrup, and then, of course, there's corn flour and corn oil and whatnot. Now, popcorn is not genetically engineered. Blue corn is not GMO, although it's sometimes mixed with other corn before they make the blue corn chips. But the corn of the cob, most of it is not genetically modified, but some is. Now, the amount of corn in the United States that's genetically modified is 85%. The amount of soy is 91%. 88% of cotton, about 80-85% of canola. So it's, if you, and also most of the sugar beets. So the sugar that doesn't say pure cane sugar is going to be a mixture of sugar from sugar cane and sugar beets. So these are some of the main things to look for.
So, I mean, is there just a blanket, you know, it sounds like the easiest way, honestly, to avoid them is do what we as nutritionists always tell people to do, which is like go out around the perimeter of the grocery store and don't buy processed foods. And, you know, it sounds like a lot of the things we've been telling people to do are the best ways to go.
Absolutely. You get a lot of other benefits from avoiding the processed foods. And I'll tell you, in my film, Hidden Dangers in Kids' Meals, which is free online, it's 28 minutes, there was a school that switched from processed, pre-cooked foods to freshly prepared, healthy foods. And the behavior of the kids changed dramatically overnight. It became from an out-of-control, chaotic school to an orderly, coherent environment. Now, when they took out the processed foods, they took out nearly all the GM ingredients. So we don't know if it's the GM that was causing the behavior problems or some of the other additives that you find, or a combination of both. But this is definitely a great suggestion because the food nowadays is practically unrecognizable to our ancestors, all the stuff that comes in the boxes and packages, and the most radical change is the genetic engineering.
Well, and I think it's just, I mean, it's too tough to go, okay, this is blue corn, is this corn okay? You know, it gets down to a point where you just got to simplify things for people. And honestly, I'm listening to this going, and I'll tell you where I'm coming to a little challenge. Simplest thing would be buy organic, you know, don't buy processed foods. We teach people how to cook this way. I actually have a really fantastic Cordon Bleu trained chef who works with us who then went to natural chef school. So she's integrating all of this in and all the real, you know, much more of the fermented foods and raw foods and organic and grass-fed. But it would strike me that a place where we'd have a challenge is we always tell people to get grass-fed beef and organic chicken because I would think that would be a real tough place, and especially when you're eating out and they've got corn-fed beef. What's the risk there?
That's an excellent question. We don't know from any studies, because not a single study has been published, on the effects of humans eating animals that might be sick from eating GMOs. We do know that the scientists at the Center for Veterinary Medicine at the Food and Drug Administration were very shocked that they were going to introduce these foods on the market without testing, because they said if there are toxins in these foods, they could bioaccumulate in the animals. As the animals eat more and more corn and soy, whatever toxin might not get flushed out of their system, it might continue to build up and end up in the milk or meat. And this was explicit in a memo from the Center for Veterinary Medicine and their Gerald Geist, their director, and it was ignored. Again, you're right, 100% grass-fed, organic, or wild-caught are the three ways.
Get to that. I mean, I'm listening to this whole thing now because I don't ever eat, I would not eat salmon unless it was wild anymore, or halibut. I just wouldn't do it. And so I'm listening, too, if you're out at a restaurant, unless you know that it's grass-fed beef, you can't order it.
If you
really
want to avoid it.
Because they're not, I mean, they're not, from what everything I'm hearing you say right now is, no one's going to go research this. Why would they want to open that can of worms? Right? I mean, unless I'm missing something, we're not going to find what we really need to find. But there's enough of what you've shown so far, and, of course, those people have all been gagged, basically, you know, that we're not going to hear a lot about this. But, I mean, the proof's out there, and I think just the proof of – looking at fertility rates and looking at or infertility rates, looking at the allergies going on, looking at all of the GI problems, it just goes on and on and on. And I mean, and looking at obesity rates, and sure, you can say, oh, you know, people are eating more processed food, and it's the artificial sweeteners, it's the color, it's everything. It's
and the
everything,
thing is, when GMOs were introduced in 96, 7% of Americans had three or more chronic illnesses. In 9 years, it jumped to 13%. There was a doubling of peanut allergies in the 5 years after GM was introduced, and GM soy might enhance that peanut allergy sensitivity because of a crossover. There's also a doubling of food allergy conditions that generated visits to the emergency room in 5 years. There was a doubling of food-related illnesses between 1994 and 2001. The American Academy of Environmental Medicine has taken a bold step in May to essentially condemn GM food, saying that there's causal relationships now that have been established from the animal feeding studies, many of which we've talked about today, that link GMOs to immune system problems and allergies and asthma and inflammation, accelerated aging, dysfunctional insulin regulation, gastrointestinal disorders, damaged organs, et cetera, et cetera. And they called on the government for a moratorium on GMOs and for long-term testing. And then last week, the Lyme-induced autism foundation followed up, similar vein, asking for doctors, just like the American Academy of Environmental Medicine, asking for doctors to prescribe non-GMO diets and for patients to avoid them whenever possible. So many medical organizations and many medical doctors are already prescribing non-GMO diets and saying, we can't wait for the government to start protecting us. In fact, they've been directed to protect the interests of the biotechnology industry. For example, for labeling, you know, most industrialized countries label products mandatorily if they contain GMOs, but in the United States, the FDA knows that 9 out of 10 Americans want mandatory labeling but ignore their interests to protect the profit of 5 biotech companies.
Well, look how long it's come just to label about trans fats.
I know.
You know? I mean, my gosh. I mean, this took forever just to get the trans fat thing up there. So honestly, and this is such more complicated of an issue because, as you said, it reminds me of MSG, where MSG might have been somewhere along the chain, but they don't have to put it on the label because it was at the starting point. You know, again, you've got a cow eating genetically modified corn or a fish having genetically modified soy. They could easily just kind of skip over that, right? Because
exactly.
It's the starting point. So I think it really is going to get down to the point. I mean, basically, when you look at this, we need people like you. I mean, thank God for you. When I heard this stuff, I'm like, oh, and you make all of this stuff available free. You are just something else. It is incredible.
Well, I can't give away my book, Seeds of Deception or Genetic Roulette, because I pay for those, but I keep the price low.
But, I mean, you have all this amazing resources on your, and people need your books. Everybody needs to buy those. But you have incredible resources on your website. You're just, it's really amazing because this now is something after I heard you speak, and here I am, I'm in the field. I had no idea. I really had no idea.
You're not alone, JJ. Like, that's the case. You know, most Americans have no idea whether they're in the field or not. If you ask the average American, have you ever eaten a GM food in your life, 60% say no, 15% say I don't know. While they're eating a GM food, they'll say this. It's like completely, you know, missed the radar screen, and that was on purpose. That was by design. That's part of what I talk about in Seeds of Deception, how the media was muzzled. There was, for example, two investigative reporters, award-winning reporters, that worked for a Fox TV station in Florida, and they were going to blow the whistle on bovine growth hormone. They had a 4-part news series. 3 days before it was to air, a threatening letter from Monsanto's attorney promising dire consequences to Fox and its owner, Rupert Murdoch, ultimately canceled the series, and the reporters got fired. And that's just one of many stories.
Yeah.
Many stories, like a scientist who discovered contamination in Mexico. He said the senior Mexican government official threatened him, implying, we know where your children go to school, trying to get him not to publish the evidence. We have this particular Russian scientist who discovered the high death rate among babies whose mothers were fed GM soy. She was told to do no more GM research. Someone at her institute actually tried to comfort her by saying, well, maybe the GM soy will solve the overpopulation problem on Earth. Which is bizarre.
Oh my gosh.
I mean,
yeah. So I guess, you know, the good news is that we have the Internet, and the Internet's like the great leveler. It's totally changed the playing field.
There's a great film out called The World According to Monsanto, which really blows the lid on all this for people that don't like to read books. I got the rights to distribute that in the United States from this award-winning filmmaker in France. Fantastic film, but it Well, it's on my site.
I've been tweeting the whole time. I'm tweeting all the stuff you're saying.
Okay, cool. So The World According to Monsanto, the thing is, if you just look at that and nothing else, it can be very disheartening. Like, I went to give a lecture 2 weeks after they played it and didn't discuss anything afterwards, didn't play any of my bonus material on the same DVD, and someone came up to me and burst into tears and said, "Is there any hope?" And yes, there is hope. We put on a 3-minute video in the bonus material called What We Can Do, which we can talk about, and also an 18-minute film called Your Milk on Drugs, Just Say No, that's available free on our site, and a 73-minute talk that I've given of my basic PowerPoint about the health dangers, and our shopping guide and our health risk brochure. But what we do is we take the energy of people wanting to avoid GMOs and turn it into a major activism piece. And that, what is the activism necessary? How to get rid of GMOs? That comes down to something very simple. And this is why GMOs, even though they're one of the worst health and environmental threats we face, they're one of the easiest major problems to fix. And that is, if people, for their own purposes, just to protect themselves and their family, if they start avoiding the brands that contain GM ingredients, when we hit about 5%, I'm guessing, 5% of U.S. shoppers now diverted to the non-GM brands, that's what we call a tipping point.
So can you lay out some of the top brands right now? Let's just shoot them out.
Name any top brand. Nestle's, Hershey's, you know, Betty Crocker, all of these things, they don't pay attention. On our shopping guide, we list examples of the companies that contain GM ingredients, and it's these ones that everyone knows about. So, you know, there's some. I mean, if you look at Ragu spaghetti sauce, if you buy Ragu Chunky, it's got soybean oil and high fructose corn syrup. It's GMO. But if you buy Ragu Light, it's got olive oil. It's not genetically engineered. So you can learn how to even buy even among these brands. But if we had 15 million Americans, 5% of the population, choosing non-GM brands, then the companies, they've already removed GM ingredients in Europe because they hit the tipping point there. They've removed it from Japan. They can see they've lost millions of dollars. The trend is on track here. They'll just remove GMOs. And in Europe, it happened in a single week because of high-profile coverage of Dr. Arpad Pusztai's food safety scandal. 750 articles were written in a single month. That was too much for the food companies. Within a single week, they knocked it out. Here, the major media is ignoring the issue. And so, as you said, we use the Internet and other targeted media to reach the demographic groups who are certainly large enough to create the tipping point, but they're also very receptive, the health-conscious shopper, the parents of young kids, the religious groups that think GMO really means God move over, the healthcare practitioners like yourself. So we go to those who have the receptor cells open for this knowledge, and we give them the documented health risks of GMOs, and we package it for the right brain, the left brain, the visual learner, the podcast, the iPod owner, all these different ways so that we can hit the tipping point and put me out of a job so I can get on to do something else by ending the genetic engineering of the food supply.
Now, what about Trader Joe's and Whole Foods? Are those safe places, or do they still manage to sneak into these places?
Within those stores, if you get the house brands, if you get the Trader Joe brand, if you get the Whole Foods 365 brand, they have made commitments to remove GMOs from their own brand. But you can't just pull something off the shelf at Whole Foods and figure that everything on the shelf is non-GMO. That's definitely not true. Now, Whole Foods has gone a step further than Trader Joe's. Hopefully, Trader Joe's will catch up. The Whole Foods people have adopted a third-party verified program to back up their claims of non-GMO. This is called the Non-GMO Project, and they're going to start putting seals on products as early as this October, so next month. Very good news, and I think that the entire natural food industry will ultimately be forced to go that route. Just like organic is the standard for now with a certification, anyone making non-GMO claims is going to have to do this third-party verified stuff, and I think everyone appealing to health-conscious shoppers will certainly be non-GMO soon, because this information is getting out. In spite of the low numbers so far, we actually have in place with our campaign for healthier eating in America, which you can read all about on our site, responsibletechnology.org, that you can find out how you can participate with a GM-free school campaign, or approaching your health food store, or approaching your healthcare practitioner, introducing it to your religious organization, to chefs. We have the packages of information to make it turnkey, so no one else has to learn all the little details that I've spent years studying. They just have to hand someone a DVD or a CD and say, "Hey, listen to this in your car," or "Can you come over to my house and watch a film with me?"
Yeah, I would really love to engage. I'm sitting here listening to all this going, okay, I want to get you to write a newsletter, a little 750-word article for our e-zine, and I want to know what can we do. Like,
already done.
Things.
Already
so
done. You go on my
we
website.
Do.
Yeah, we've got it done. There's 45 articles. 45 articles on my website in the newsletter section. You can steal them all. You can put them on your website. You can shorten them without even talking to me. Just shorten them and send them. If you want to make changes and talk to me, sign up for my free electronic syndicated column. You get one every month. You can send it out each month. We've got little podcasts. You can put them on your site. Next week or the week after, we'll have a whole dedicated news site just to an interactive non-GMO shopping guide. We've got the videos, Hidden Dangers in Kids' Meals and Your Milk on Drugs, right up on our screen, so you can link to those. So, yeah, absolutely. Just steal away. Steal.
Oh, it's fantastic. You are the hero here of GMO, and I hugely appreciate it. And, you know, my big goal of this conversation was, I know when I heard it, I thought I was aware of GMO, and I kind of thought I was being okay with it, but I realized it's like, you know, it's like crack, man. You don't touch it, you know. It's like artificial sweeteners. I didn't put it into that category of artificial sweeteners and colors and trans fats. I just was like, oh, yes, stay away from those. Not like, you know, at all costs, stay away from those. It's completely changed my thought process. And I hope that, you know, no one could listen to you and not feel that way. And what I really love today is that you gave us very simple alternatives, and they really fit in with what we've been telling people. So it's easy. But I want everyone to go to the website and grab, because I remember being at the talk, you had so much great information there, and it was easy to use. And this isn't overwhelming. The information's overwhelmingly scary. I mean, it's
scary. Yeah, right.
And I started, when I was hearing it, going, gosh, I've ruined my kids and my, you know. But, you know, it is, the body heals, so it is fixable, some of it, you know. If you've created some reproductive problems, I'm not sure, but, you know, we can fix our guts again. So the most important thing is, if you know you're being exposed to a toxin, stop, right?
Yeah, you know, the mice that were eating the soy, they had changes in their livers, testicles, and pancreas after 8 months of eating the GM soy. They switched to non-GM soy for a month, and most of the changes started to reverse.
Oh, that's awesome. That's a great finish, because that was the one that we all hear about going, have we wrecked everything? And
I know,
think that's the best part is, you can, you know, the good news with health is that you can turn it around, but you have to start with awareness and then put it into action. So,
exactly.
Again, I thank you so much for your time. We are grabbing articles. We're going to feature you in the e-zine, and we hugely appreciate all of your work. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.